This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 252 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, sitting with a interesting setup tonight because the cable is out in my area due to a tree being cut down inadvertently. So my reception hopefully will be good, but that's why we record on double channels, our top secret double probation secret, now that you all know. So we got a good show tonight, Max. What do you think?
Yeah, we do. Some interesting stories from around the world.
We've got Airbus Zephyr flies. A forecast predicts strong growth from the civil drone market. DJI speeds up unlocking the geofence. Another incident for the You're Grounded series. Suicide drones that take out hostile UAVs and more drone flocking and real drone flocking. That's flocking, folks. I think my co-host wanted to see if I screwed up on that.
You did just fine, David.
All right, let's get started. Well, our first story comes from yahoo.com/news. Airbus unveils pioneering solar-powered drone. At the Farnborough Air Show, which is occurring this week as we record it, which will go down in history as the air show where they looped a C-130, but that's the other show. Airbus unveiled its Zephyr solar-powered drone to fill the HAPS role. And HAPS is what, Max?
High-altitude pseudo-satellite. And, of course, the Zephyr, we've talked about, that's the concept where a drone, if you will, solar-powered, orbits up at a really high altitude and provides internet connectivity to areas that don't have it. Airbus said that their Zephyr S made its maiden flight July 11th, 2018, out in Arizona.
And they're looking to produce seven different models between 2018 and 2019. And it's not a little airplane. It's got a wingspan of 82 feet, weighs less than 55 pounds, and can fly at almost 70,000 feet or 21,000 meters. Pretty good high altitude profile there, Max, for a very light airplane with a big wingspan.
Very light, yeah, 55 pounds. That's kind of incredible. But yeah, I was interested to learn that there are all these different models being planned. As we said, this was the Zephyr S that has flown. There's a Zephyr T coming that is somewhat larger, would have 108-foot wingspan. And Airbus tells us that these would generally fly for around 3 months before they would come back down. And also, notably, Britain's Defense Ministry is the first customer. So they're anticipating applications here, both commercial and military.
And of course, these wings are so big for one reason and one reason only, besides the fact that the altitude, you need larger wings when you're flying that high, is because the wings have the solar panels. So the more wing you got, the more solar panels you got, the longer you can stay airborne. So that's why we have 108 and very light aircraft with really large wings. So, you know, this is one of those aircraft, Max, that, you know, NASA's looking at to send to Mars with the thin atmosphere and, you know, and long endurance. So I'm sure that Airbus wants into that action also. So, but let's talk about civil drone production, and the action will soar over the next decade. UASmagazine.com, Teal Group, who we've had multiple people from on our other show, which is an analyst, put out the 2018 World Civil Unmanned Aerial Systems Market Profile and Forecast. And the features are really in-depth, like
10-year market forecasts. They cover the overall market as well as segments of the business, such as construction, agriculture, communications, energy, aerial photography, and insurance. It also covers the civil government market, including homeland security and law enforcement. They also have expert analysis. In other words, what will be hot over the next decade, what they're predicting. They also look at venture capital and have done an analysis of the involvement of venture capital firms attracting funds in ways that investment is transforming the market. But there's more.
They're talking about regulations and the different ways the regulations for civil commercial UAS are being implemented worldwide. And how is that transforming market advantage? Different countries handle different things. So we've seen that a little bit with the testing here in the States. For a while there, everybody was going to Canada because it was much more liberal. Companies, what are the strategic companies that are using to position themselves in the market, including how are they doing it? By acquisitions, teaming up, or product development? Well, we've both seen Boeing and Airbus combine to purchase and get a market share of this. Interestingly enough, the forecast projects non-military UAS production growing from 4.4 billion worldwide to 13.9 billion by 2027. That's interesting in my opinion because it's 9 years, and that implies that it's going to be approximately $1 billion growth each year for the next 9 years. That's pretty impressive, Max. What do you think?
It is. That kind of growth rate is phenomenal. One of the statistics that we watch is how commercial drone use grows relative to consumer drone growth. And the big driver from the beginning has been more on the consumer side, but commercial drone use is coming in strong and sort of accelerating at a rapid rate. So Teal Group predicts that commercial drone use will actually pass consumer drone market in 2024. So that's kind of the crossover point. And from then on, the commercial drone use becomes the largest segment in the civil market. They also had a kind of an interesting conclusion about venture capital funding.
They do, Max. Interesting, and I think we've talked about this trend all year. I think it was one of our forecasts for the year, which is a shift from hardware to software and services. Hmm. You know, the hardware is getting pretty mature. Now it's what can you do with it and all of the other accessories that are involved, the software, the processing, the services that go with the technology. So glad to see that Teal Group agrees with our overall assessment of the, you know, why aren't we getting a slice of the, if you want the full report, it's only $2,495 and it's 515 pages. So if anybody would like to purchase that on our behalf and send it so Max and I can read it, we'll be happy to. But this is a podcast with a budget, and that's well beyond our budget.
For sure. Now, Teal Group, of course, does really, really comprehensive analysis, and they're not doing this for the general public or for the press. This kind of a report is directed towards commercial or corporate entities for whom that kind of a price is not unreasonable. It's a 515-page report, I think you said. And there really is a lot of detail. You can download the table of contents and an executive overview, and we'll have the link to that in the show notes. But there is, again, a lot of detail in this. And one thing to note is this is not a U.S.-centric kind of a study. It really is worldwide, and they have results by country for many, many countries. So you don't have to be a U.S. Drone entity to be interested in this. It's got applicability across the world. So again, we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Well, if we're going to talk about players in the drone industry, this is the number one. DJI will unlock geofencing for enterprise drone users. This was from GPSworld.com. They're going to provide professional pilots the way to unlock their pre-programmed geofencing.
That's right, David. They being DJI, of course, has geofencing built in, but they've had for quite some time a provision by which those who are authorized to fly in these areas that would otherwise be geofenced have a way to unlock that in their DJI drones. And so what the company's doing is making it easier. They're streamlining that process. And DJI has actually a global authorization team, and that's now staffed around the clock so that they can process applications for unlocking the DJI drones by providing the unlocking codes. And there's a website where you can make an application, which is simply dji.com/flysafe/custom-unlock.
And you supply information about the aircraft, the controller, the authorization documents from the controlling authorities. So you're unlocking the ability, but you're providing the documentation should somebody come back to DJI and say, why was this person able to do this? So hopefully, and this is part of the Fly Safe program. So I'm sure they're working with the FAA, that these people who are getting this authorization are legitimately have a reason to unlock these geofences. So it's a good thing. It's a protection, and then they're making it easier for people to go around that protection, but provide the documentation necessary to support it.
And DJI says with their new streamlined process that it will take up to 30 minutes in most cases. They do have a caveat that in certain special circumstances, authorization may take longer. But generally, they're looking to process that within 30 minutes. And of particular interest to enterprise operators that have fleets of drones, DJI is making a provision whereby enterprise users can include multiple aircraft in a single custom unlocking request. So that's handy for enterprise users.
And why do we have geofencing? Well, our next story. Some pilots don't get where they shouldn't be flying. Dumber Dumber, a drone flies dangerously close to an A380 during takeoff. This is from fstoppers.com. I got to admit, it's a pretty video, but really stupid.
It really is a bonehead move, but it is a good video. There's somebody who's got a drone that's up over the end of the runway. This was on the island of Mauritius. It was an Emirates Airbus A380 taking off, and they said they positioned themselves towards the end, a little bit beyond the end of the runway, and wait for the A380 to make its takeoff roll, then take to the air and fly right past the drone. This article in F-Stoppers says maybe within about 300 feet from the left wingtip. Every time I see one of these things, I don't want to promote it, you know. I don't want to ignore it. I want the guy to get caught. But I guess in this case, there's no information, at least at this point, as to who the drone pilot is or was.
No. And the video had been published on Facebook by a pilot who describes himself as an A380 captain for Air France. He wrote the video caption, quote, "That's what a little crazy guy managed to do with a drone in Mauritius. Hello, flight safety." Torn. Just stupid. We really shouldn't endorse this stuff, but we have to talk about it because we as an industry have to get these people not to do this stuff because it makes us look bad.
And of course, there's different ways you might protect airports from rogue drones. Some of them just rely on education and awareness. We've seen a number of anti-drone devices that may be another way to deal with these rogue drones. But the next story, David, this could be a really exciting way to take care of that problem.
This is from our favorite, well, one of our favorite websites, thedrive.com. Army buys small suicide drones to break up hostile swarms and potentially more. Raytheon at Farnborough this week has shipped more than 32 Coyote drones to the U.S. Army, the Block 1B variant. The Coyote includes a small warhead and a fire control radar. It can operate alone or in a swarm. So using a swarm of drones to take out a drone.
This thing is pretty impressive. And there's a video in the article that's worth taking a look at. The Coyote is small. It's under 10 pounds, and it's launched from tubes. Tube launchers are mounted on the back of Army 6x6 tactical trucks, and these contain an explosive warhead. The Coyote is launched through the tube, after which the wings and the tail and all unfold. And then it's got a KU band radio frequency system that helps guide the drone to the target. The explosion in this video is fairly dramatic. It's a lot more than you need just to take out a Phantom, I think.
Yeah, but you know, they're sometimes using sledgehammers for flies is not a bad thing. I mean, in the news last week, Israel took out a small drone with a Patriot missile. So I don't think this is as bad of a sledgehammer as that is. But Raytheon also is looking to do part of the Navy's low-cost UAV swarming technology effort, or LOCUST. Now, I've decided that that's one of those ones where the government has spent more time naming the program than actually doing the program to work that out.
It's amusing.
I always give NASA credit for all of their groupings. But so this is also not a cheap way to destroy a DJI Phantom, is it, Max?
No, they say that the Coyotes without a warhead costs around $15,000 each. Sounds like a lot for an expendable drone, certainly a lot less than a Patriot missile or other options. It's cheaper than, for example, a Stinger missile or something of that sort. As for the swarm angle, Raytheon says that multiple Coyotes might be able to defeat drone swarms. They say the company can load the drones with software that it developed as part of this LOCUST program and lets the drones operate as a swarm or as a group themselves. You know, if the Coyote sounds familiar, well, previously, I believe it was last year in 2017, NOAA experimented with some of these Coyote drones. And what they did is they dropped them from their WP-3D Orion research aircraft into the eyewall of a hurricane. So here we see, I don't know if it's a repurposing of this drone, David, or if they intended all along to arm them in this particular way, but it is an example of multi-mission kind of use of a single drone design.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about attacking swarms with a weapon like this. And all I could think of was all of the missiles that they wanted to use, the Genie particularly, which was a nuclear warhead head missile that was going to be launched into the middle of a Russian bomber formation coming across the, and since it was a nuclear warhead, it would blow up in the center of the formation, taking out the aircraft. This is kind of the same thing. You launch the one missile into the middle of the swarm and hopefully detonate everything. Well, let's flock on, shall we? What the flock, Max?
This is an item from Wired. This is about flocking. I call this the real deal. This is how a flock of drones developed collective intelligence. And these are drones that can flock without any pre-programming, and there's no control station. Instead, these drones communicate amongst themselves. They self-organize. They split and fly around obstacles. Then the flock rejoins all autonomously, and all the while avoiding collision with each other. You know, David, some of the displays we've seen of large numbers of drones flying in formation and that sort of thing, well, a lot of the times that's all programmed in. And so the drones are flying a particular path. In this case, that path is not pre-programmed in. In fact, you may not even know exactly what that path is going to be. These things flock just like real birds or like schools of fish. It's really kind of an incredible thing.
This is really kind of cool that flocking is always kind of interesting because doesn't necessarily mean there's one bird or fish that's driving the whole formation. They all sort of take turns, and this does the same thing. So it's a very interesting technology that they can think on their own, and it's not pre-programmed.
Now, this flocking model is described in Science Robotics, Volume 3, Issue 20. And the research itself comes from the robotic lab in the Department of Biological Physics at a university in Budapest. And it's more than just theoretical. Sure, they ran simulations. In fact, they use a lot of simulations to refine the model, quite a large number of simulations. And then they tested it in the real world. And there is video of some of these tests, some of these flights that are taking place with 30 drones. They use 30 quadcopters. But the tests have been successful and have so far validated the predicted behavior of the drones. It's really rather amazing. There's an article from the researchers, or a page that we'll put a link to in the show notes, called Optimized Flocking of Autonomous Drones in Confined Environments. And there's also a video of the same name. And David, I think we should make this the video of the week. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a much better choice than the A380 video.
All right, we got some feedback. This came from Scott Dubin, and he shared with us something. This is an unmanned aerial vehicle procurement guide. It's something he developed recently and was published by the USAID Global Health Supply Chain Program Procurement Supply Management Project. And what they've done here is something, well, it's a little bit different than what I assumed when I first saw this before I looked at it. I thought it'd be just a drone guide. You know, here's these different products and, you know, maybe here's the advantages of some and advantages of others. But what it does is it takes a step back and looks at this from a generalized standpoint. And they identify a large number of different factors, different things you want to consider if you're thinking about employing unmanned aircraft for a particular project, a research project, or if you have an application in mind, a commercial application, something of that sort. It's not for just a hobbyist to pick their next drone. This is for much larger applications than that. And it takes you through and looks at all these different factors. If you're not sure what to think about when you're considering procuring some drones for a project, this will really, really help, I think. And so we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's worthwhile to take a look at, I think.
And he also sent us a notice that on August 1st at 10 a.m. Eastern, they're going to have a webinar on the guide with the UAVs for Payload Delivery Working Group. And we'll have some more details from Scott on that. But so if you're available, August 1st at 10 a.m. So thanks to Scott for that. And we'll follow up when we hear more about the webinar.
For sure. All right. Well, David, I think it's about time to wrap up this episode of the UAV Digest. We want to thank all of you for listening. Of course, this has been episode 252. You can find us on our homepage at theuavdigest.com. We have show notes for each episode, includes photos, links to the stories, videos, all kinds of resources that are helpful if you want to learn more about what we've been talking about. And as always, if you want to go straight to the show notes for this particular episode, well, then just go to theuavdigest.com/252.
And of course, we're all over the place on social media, on Twitter at UAV Digest. On Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. We'd love for you to join our Slack listener team, join the club. All you need to do is you need to send us an email and we'll give you a secret password that will allow you to come in. Or you just knock twice on the door and give the password and you can come in and join all the fun. You can also leave us some feedback on however you obtain this podcast, either by Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher.com. And of course, you can reach us by email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.